Here they come. Turn four. Final lap.
Live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Rev up your engines and get ready for the racing weekend.
Here they come. Checkered flag.
It's Chasing Checkers with your host, Chase McCabe, on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
That is right. Welcome in, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app. You can also watch on Twitch, Twitter, Periscope, whatever it is now, YouTube as well. And check everything out at thegamenashville.com, chasingcheckersradio.com. Good to see you. Good to be here on a Saturday morning, 2 weeks away from the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. Cannot wait for that event to come to our city here in a couple of weeks. I mean, if you've been driving around downtown, around where the course is going to be, you have seen it, because they have been building the race course through the streets of downtown, and it looks awesome. The catch fence is up on the Korean Veterans Bridge. This is going to be so much fun. I cannot wait for this. And you've heard a lot of flavor on this show and on Darren Donick and Chase and all around on everything that's going to be coming to our city. Our show brought to you by Firestone jumping on board this week, as they're going to have a lot going on with the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, European Collision Repair, Mercedes-Benz of Music City, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. So appreciate all of their support for Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's an off week for NASCAR. It's an off week for IndyCar. Of course, the next race for IndyCar is the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. And now NASCAR has a couple of weeks off because of the Olympics and NBC's coverage of the Olympics. I'll say this right off the bat. I understand that NBC, this is their baby every 2 years, I guess, now, with the Summer and Winter Olympics. They want to put all their resources into that. Understand it. Respect it. Nothing against the Olympics. But I think it's a mistake for NASCAR to take 2 weeks off. I have always felt that you could reduce the season's too long, and they have all these off weeks. I get it. It's a tough sport. Maybe you build some in, but they've had too many in the past. And when you have a sport that is building momentum, especially in the middle of the summer when, you know, not everybody's watching the Olympics, when there's not a lot going on, taking 2 weeks off, my opinion, I think is a mistake. So I hope NASCAR thinks about that. Maybe they get some numbers from this year to support that. And maybe they change their mind. But I just think taking 2 weeks off is not the play. But I've also been a diehard racing fan since I was three, and I hate that I don't have a race to watch this weekend. So I guess I'm going to have to get on iRacing. That's what I'm going to have to do. Maybe we'll stream a little bit. We'll see. But just my 2 cents on that. So they raced at New Hampshire last week, and it was kind of a wild event, as you may or may not know. Let's start with the beginning of the race. Rain had been an issue. Rain had been in the area. They knew it was a possibility. It was very cloudy. It was a little bit misty, but they started the race. They got about 6 laps in, and this happened.
You're going to have to leave me a little bit of room.
Really good. Just be easy here.
Oh, we got a car on the wall.
That's two cars. Truex, it's raining. Raining in turn one.
It all of a sudden started raining. All of a sudden just started raining really quickly in turn one. Bunch of the leaders had trouble. Bunch of the guys up front.
Kyle Busch leading the race. First one to the corner in the rain. You see the damage. Heavy damage to the 18 car. The 19 of Truex, another Joe Gibbs Toyota.
I think Hamlin has some damage too.
Some damage on the 42 car, Ross Chastain. Hamlin was backwards down in the middle of 1 and 2. Not sure if he had any contact with any other cars.
Yeah, Denny Hamlin said his car is damaged, and it was raining a good lap and a half before that. So that's what all the drivers, of course, are going to talk about when we do have a chance to talk to them, is it's still raining here on pit road.
And that's coverage of NBC Sports Dale Earnhardt Jr., Steve Letarte, Jeff Burton, Marty Snyder, the voices that you heard there. And they did have a chance to talk to him, all right? We'll get to that in just a second. But it was bizarre. I mean, the thing was, you know, you kind of heard from the beginning that, yeah, there are some raindrops. You could see it on the camera lens that there was rain. How heavy that rain was, it's hard to tell from television. But I feel like, you know, if you're at the end of the race and there's somebody out front leading, it's pouring. It's pouring. They're gonna go on the radio and go, I can't see a thing. It's absolutely pouring. When I was in Atlanta a few weeks ago, I was roaming the pits. I was listening to the in-car radio of Eric Almirola, who won this week. And it was a little misty. And, I mean, you would have thought it was a thunderstorm in turn four, listening to him on the radio, because they were past halfway and he had to pit and all that stuff. But I feel like if the drivers are saying it early in the race, there's something to it. And they ended up racing, and then we saw that Kyle Busch gets wrecked as the leader, and as you can imagine, Kyle Busch, not happy.
Yeah, we started the race under a mist, and it never should have went green to begin with, but then it kept getting worse and worse with lap, and the lap before, I went into one, and it shoved the nose really bad, and I was able to keep it under control. It wasn't wet enough, and then the next time I went down there, hell, I lifted at the flag stand, maybe a little past the flag stand, don't get too dramatic, and just backed it in. I mean, we've been talking about it for two laps that it was raining. There's no sense in saying what I want to say. It doesn't do you any good.
How frustrating are these situations, knowing that you had a shot starting on the pole and at one of your better racetracks, Kyle?
I mean, we're done. We're going home. It's over. You know, there's no fixing that thing.
Is there a way to improve communication, maybe, so the tower can hear quicker, maybe?
It's going to get me in trouble.
Kyle Busch, frustrated, rightfully so, as he was leading the race from the pole, had a good car, a lot of momentum with that team right now. Think he had a really good shot to win the race. And you hear alarms going off, all that stuff. He wasn't happy. Kudos to Marty Snyder for trying to get the answers out. I think he was trying to get Kyle to be Kyle. Kyle was reserved, even though he tried to hit the pace car under the caution. But, you know, some people have kind of given him a hard time about that and said, you know, you shouldn't do that. I'm not going to lie to you. I probably would have done the same thing if I was in his position. He's pissed off. Bottom line, it's what he was. The thing is, you know, Kyle has been very vocal over the last few weeks. In Atlanta, he was extremely vocal after winning the Xfinity race on that being his last Xfinity race and the reasons why. You know, NASCAR has this rule in place. You can only run five. They want some separation between the trucks and the Xfinity and the Cup Series. He's not happy about that. So anytime you brought that up, he got snippy. Kind of got snippy with me on it when I asked him about it. That's fine. He was very, very outspoken about the repave and the reconfiguration at Atlanta. Doesn't like that. Doesn't like that the drivers were not consulted, which I get. I certainly see that. You know, the ones driving the racetrack, they should be asked. You know, they're going to do it probably no matter what, but you should include them. And most of them were not. So he's already mad. But I thought it was interesting that he held back, that he was like, you know, I'm going to get in trouble if I say what I really want to say. The thing is this, and Kyle Busch is one thing. Kyle Busch is Kyle. But they talked to Truex. He was upset. Hamlin, same thing. Like, hey, what are we doing? Why did we start this race? The rain was there. It just does not help this perceived disconnect between NASCAR and the drivers right now. And they got to get this figured out because the sport is the healthiest it's been in a long time, and you can't screw that up because you got the drivers in NASCAR that can't get along. It is amazing to me that this has been a subject this year when things, in my opinion, have been going so well. And you gotta figure that part out now. Now, I will give credit. This is kind of a long clip, but I wanted to play the whole thing. NASCAR Senior Executive Vice President Steve O'Donnell went up to the NBC booth, which NASCAR Control, for those of you that are wondering, is usually like right next to the TV booth, or they're on the same level. So he walked down to the TV booth, went on with Dale Earnhardt Jr., Steve Letarte, Jeff Burton. They had a conversation on the decisions to start the race and everything that transpired.
Well, we've been joined up in the booth here by Steve O'Donnell from NASCAR. Thank you for coming up here, Steve, and being able to. You've heard a little bit of what the drivers are saying out there on the racetrack, and you can give us your perspective, NASCAR's perspective, from the booth up here.
Yeah, certainly an unfortunate situation of what we just saw, but we can only go by kind of the pre-race discussions we have before the race. Skip Childers, who drives our pace car, constant communication with him before the race starts. Are we good to go? Even the lap before we start and we go green, Kip gave us the all clear to start that race. And then as the race started progressing, right before Kyle got loose in turn two, obviously on wet track conditions, the communication to us was from the flag stand that we're seeing some mist. In any normal circumstance where we hear that, our next call is to the pace car, which is in turn one here. Are you seeing anything on your windshield? Drops started picking up. Kip communicated that. You know, as Tim Berman's about to put out the yellow, we look down and the 18 car's already getting loose. So I've been here a number of years. That's the first time I've seen that in terms of how quickly it came upon us. Certainly missed. We've raced in missed conditions before, but the track got slick, obviously, in a hurry, and it was unfortunate what took place.
So, Steve, what do you do now going forward? How do you get with the drivers to communicate to try to make this so it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, we'll be on scanners. We're monitoring the scanners during the race as well. If we hear a lot of chatter from the spotters, obviously we take that into consideration as well. So when we go back out, we'll make sure with the pace car, you know, not only hearing from them, but the spotters. You see us do this all the time, too. Thumbs up, thumbs down as we're going to go. We'll put that back in place as well.
So looking at the rest of today's event, any consideration to the drivers or teams that were involved? I know we're not looking at backup cars like an all-star race, but there's a damaged vehicle clock. We have rules of what parts and pieces are allowed to change. Would there be any consideration to allow these guys to maybe make some other altercations to their car to continue?
Yeah, I need to get back over and check with our guy. I know there's some discussions that have been going on, but I'll get back over to race control and see where we're at on that one.
Typically when something like this happens, what does NASCAR do the following week? What kind of conversations will you guys have internally about the process and maybe how to streamline it or speed it up? And how will the drivers play a role in that?
Oh, they always play a role in it. So we'll be talking to the drivers during the week. And I think, you know, that was our normal process. Obviously, in this time, you know, we had some challenges of what just happened. But the communication from our standpoint was really quick from the flag stand to the pace car. We'll just employ some more things up in the spotter stand and make sure that that communication continues in as real time as possible.
That's really, I guess, the question I have is, you know, a one-mile track, we talked about it. We now see Road America or some of these other facilities. We've seen the inspection process change in the garage. I wish I had some ideas to suggest, but is that really what you do now is just sit down with all of the key partners involved and figure out whatever the best way to kind of move forward to try to fine-tune this?
Yeah, I think, you know, what's great about our industry right now is the two-way dialogue that we have between the industry and NASCAR. And, you know, anytime we can improve, we're going to do that. So we'll take any feedback we can. Again, we felt like we were making the right call at the time. This is the quickest I've seen something come upon us, you know, the track go away that quickly. But again, we've got to get that right, and we'll continue to talk about that with the team.
Well, we know it's an unfortunate situation and a tough situation for you guys to be in, but we thank you for coming up here, answering some of our questions.
Hi, I'm Kyle Petty. Thanks for watching. All
right, there you go. There it's sorry, Kyle. Didn't mean to cut you off there. But Steve O'Donnell with Dale Jr., Jeff Burton, and Steve Letarte. So I'll say this. I like Steve a lot. Steve has been great to deal with. He's been on this show before, had the opportunity to meet him at the Nashville Super Speedway. He, in my opinion, since he has been involved in his current position, has helped make this sport better. And so NASCAR, in my opinion, made a mistake. They learned a valuable lesson that could have been a lot worse. We've seen this. I can only remember really one time before this that something like that happened, and that was the All-Star race in 2001 where they dive off into one, and as they transition, you know, to the backstretch, it starts pouring and cars wreck everywhere. It happens fast sometimes. I think that that's probably the case here, but I just feel like with the driver saying, hey, I don't know about this. It's raining pretty good. Maybe we shouldn't go green yet. That's where there's got to be a little bit more communication and trust. You know, like I said, the drivers aren't going to say, I don't want to race early on like that. If this was the end of the race, okay. I'll give that to, especially the guy leading. But at the beginning, before they've even thrown the green, I think I'd pay attention to him on that. But I give Steve O'Donnell credit. He went in there. He answered the questions. He faced it. And eventually they got the race going again. And unfortunately, you know, some of those drivers, Kyle Busch being the big one, did not get to participate. Now, I had thrown out on Twitter, the difficult part here was they did not have backup cars. For those of you wondering, with the rules this year, when they go to a track and they don't practice and they don't qualify, they take one car. They don't need a backup car. The only reason you take a backup car is if you wreck the primary before the race. Because the rule is once the race starts, you cannot go to the backup car. You have to use the car you start the race with. In 2001 at the All-Star Race, it was an exhibition. They did allow, because of the unique circumstances, they did allow those teams to pull the backups out and race. Jeff Gordon destroyed his primary car, pulled the backup out, won the race. If they had had backups here, I probably would have been pushing for that, but they didn't. My thing was, the rule is when the red flag is out, you cannot work on the race car. And Joey Logano actually paid for that. Supposedly they just took a picture, but they consider that working on the car. So he got punished for that. But my thing was, because of the circumstances, it would have been a good gesture on NASCAR's part to say, hey, you can work on the car during the red. We'll waive that rule for this week. Do you open a can of worms if you do that? Maybe so. But that's what I would have done, because they got an issue. There is a definite issue right now with the trust factor between the drivers and NASCAR. We're gonna get to that a little bit more. We'll step aside. We'll come back, play out the race. You'll hear from Eric Almirola, and I'll give some thoughts on the communication with NASCAR and the drivers and how you can make that better. It is Chasing Checkers. It's all presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Firestone, European Collision Repair, and Mercedes-Benz of Music City here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Game Nashville app. ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Mercedes-Benz of Music City, European Collision Repair, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Firestone. You can watch on Twitter, Periscope, YouTube, all those things. ChasingCheckersRadio.com, TheGameNashville.com has all that information. I have put out on our Twitter account at Chasen_Checkers. Chasen_Checkers. Give it a follow if you don't already. I have put the question out there of what can NASCAR do to improve communication with the drivers? Because as we've been talking about, there's just this thing right now. And you may say, oh, it's just Kyle Busch being Kyle Busch and he's whining. It's not just Kyle Busch. It's a lot of them. I went to we were so packed with guests last week, I couldn't really tell about my trip to Atlanta. But it was the first time this year that they've been able to bring a bunch of the drivers into the media center and let us all talk to them. So Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, Kevin Harvick, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, Kurt Busch, Alex Bowman, Ross Chastain, Austin Dillon, Daniel Suarez, they were all in there. And there were a lot of the drivers that you would expect, Hamlin, Harvick, that were open and honest about things. Chase Elliott was. And they don't all agree. You know, there are some drivers that think, hey, you know, whatever they want to do, they can do. That's fine. They're NASCAR. It's SMI. They want to change the track. I don't like it. I like the current Atlanta, but, you know, that's not my call. And then there are some that are go, no, you know, I need to be consulted on this. We drive it. We race it. We should be consulted. So there is this disconnect. And we'll hear from more drivers in a second. But to wrap up New Hampshire, the actual race, the problem is once they got started, it looked like they were going to be able to get it in, not have to worry about rain, but New Hampshire doesn't have lights. And this is always tricky because if you're watching at home, you're sitting there going, well, it looks fine. It looks light enough. I got plenty of light. But the thing is, you can open up the iris on a camera, and so it appears on television to be a lot lighter than it really is. So at the actual racetrack, you have to gauge as NASCAR up in the booth, the commentary booth, everybody's going, man, it's pretty dark. So NASCAR had said that once they felt like it was just getting too dark, no matter how much time was left in the race, because they already passed halfway, so it was official, they would say there's 10 laps to go and we're done. We're calling it. So Eric Almirola is leading the race. So clearly he's like, I can't see a dang thing. It's dark. Like, we gotta go. We gotta get out of here. Of course he's gonna think that. But Scott Miller, who is in the competition department, works with Steve O'Donnell. He did a media availability after the race and answered questions on why they decided to call it when they did.
Well, I don't think it got by any of us that it was getting dark, and we knew that as soon as we by the time we got the facility dry enough to resume competition, we knew we were going to be up against darkness. Depending on cautions and the rest of that, we knew it would be close. So at the end of the second stage, we let the teams know so that it didn't affect any of their strategy that we were definitely up against darkness. It could have come less earlier if there had been more cautions. So we just felt like it was getting too dark and we needed to call it. It's really just as simple as that.
Did you feel you had to let some of the race play out? You didn't want, guys caught on pit road and things like that. You had to wait for a cycle?
No, I don't think we had to wait for a cycle. It was completely based on the raceability of the track.
What was the criteria used? Because Almirola just said he could see people's faces in the grandstands and he didn't think it was dangerous.
Well, so there's a little bit more to it than that. We rely on the communication from the teams and the spotters. They were about half thumbs up and half thumbs down. We have tinted glass on the front of the tower, and it's much harder for us to see out. So it became actually started to become a little bit like iffy for us, even knowing which car was which. So, a lot of factors go into that one.
Scott Miller from the competition department. So I'll say this. With the way the race started and they kind of got a call wrong, I think there was a lot of let's be safe than sorry to call this thing. I get it. In a perfect world, if a track is a mile or under, it has lights. Like if I was in charge and didn't have to worry about finances and all that stuff, New Hampshire would have lights and you wouldn't have this problem. But it doesn't. So not every track does. They had to make a judgment call. They had already gotten one wrong. So I get it. Go ahead and make the call and go on from there. And Eric Almirola gets the win. It's a ginormous upset because if you had looked at the standings, he was 27th in standings. He'd had an awful year. And Eric Almirola, I've always liked. I thought he was going to have a pretty good career going to Stuart Haas. He had won at Talladega, but his two wins before this one had all been at super speedways. He won at Daytona with the Petties and then at Talladega with Stuart Haas. So for him to get a win at a place like New Hampshire, I think was huge for him. But obviously now it changes the game when it comes to the playoffs because he's in with that win. Has to stay in the top 30 in points, so barring anything crazy, he's in, which means that somebody that was in on points or going to be trying to get in on points gets knocked out. because of the rules. So Almirola gets the win. Christopher Bell second. Brad Keselowski third. Joey Logano fourth. Ryan Blaney fifth. Kevin Harvick sixth. Kyle Larson seventh. Ross Chastain, another solid run, in eighth. Alex Bowman ninth. Denny Hamlin, after that spin, recovers to finish in the top 10. Eric Almirola, when asked about his confidence and if it had been shaky at times.
Yeah, I mean, you always do. I think when you run good, it's easier, right? And you have a lot of confidence. And that's what, you know, people don't understand. People are just always like, man, you gotta keep your head up, and you gotta have confidence and all the thing. But that's based on results. I mean, you can't just fake that stuff, you know. And you can go to the racetrack with hopes, and you can go to the racetrack feeling good about it, like I did this weekend. Our 750 package has been good, especially here lately. We went to Nashville, qualified on the pole, ran in the top five all day. So I knew coming here that this, you know, being one of my favorite racetracks, I was like, this is going to be an opportunity for us. We were pretty good here last year, and talking to Boga before the race, they made some changes based on last year, and I was like, man, this is an opportunity for us. And on my calendar, knowing that we had to win between now and Daytona, I had here and Daytona really marked on my calendar as these are the two places we've got opportunities to figure out how to make it in the playoffs and to win. And today, you know, coming up here, I just felt good about it, but you never know. And so we started the race. And
there's Eric Almirola on his confidence and getting the win. I mean, if you look at the actual point standings, he's 23rd in points. But with the playoffs now, he is 14th in the playoff standings and 16 get in. I mean, that's how much a win can really help a driver out. And, I mean, you know, he's not the only one. Kurt Busch, in normal points, he's 14th. Now he's 11th with the win. Christopher Bell is 15th, but he's got a win, so he's 12th, so he's in. Michael McDowell won the Daytona 500, 19th in points, 13th in the playoff standings. And so now you have two drivers. Here's the crazy thing. 14, you got, there's been 14 different winners this year. Larson, Truex, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, William Byron, Alex Bowman, or I'm sorry, Denny Hamlin has not won, but his points are so good, he's up in the standings. Chase Elliott, William Byron, Alex Bowman, Joey Logano, Ryan Blaney, Brad Keselowski, Kurt Busch, Christopher Bell, Michael McDowell, Eric Almirola. So 13 different winners. So Harvick and Tyler Reddick are fighting it out for 15th and 16th without wins. Austin Dillon is 5 points to the bad trying to get into the playoffs. That's how tight this is coming down the stretch. It's going to be a lot of fun for that. I promised that we were going to get more into the disconnect and some communication with the drivers. I have a pretty good quote from Denny Hamlin that I got in Atlanta that I want you to hear when we come back. Plus Brad Keselowski, we finally know what is going to happen with him next year. We will do that when we come back here on Chasing Checkers, presented by Mercedes-Benz of Music City, European Collision Repair, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and by Firestone. Firestone Tires, the only tires driven by IndyCar drivers, and they're finally hitting the road and racing on the streets of Nashville, which is where they call home. You can watch all weekend as Firestone Rubber meets the legendary streets of the Music City and enjoy the sweet music of IndyCars racing along every stretch, even crossing water on the Korean Veterans Bridge. Yep, it feels good to be home for Firestone, the exclusive tire of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix and the official tire of the NTT IndyCar Series. Welcome back in Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can watch on Twitter, YouTube, of course, stream on the Game Nashville app as well, presented by Mercedes-Benz of Music City, European Collision Repair, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and by Firestone. Hope you're having a great start to your Saturday so far. Chase McCabe. All right, let's get into what I was talking about. How can the communication between NASCAR, the fans, and the drivers get better? And the reason I put the fans in there is I've kind of noticed sometimes, and I think you see this in any sport, you know, you've heard the shut up and dribble. They're shut up and drive. You know, there. I think there are some fans that kind of look at it as, hey, you're paid tons of money to drive a race car. I pay a good chunk of money to come see you drive the race car. Stop complaining and drive the car. There's some people that feel that way. I do not. I think that the drivers, you know, if they're not happy, if they don't have fun driving said race car, guess what they're not going to do? They're not going to drive the race car. And so you can see drivers leave. Because we've seen some guys retire before they really needed to. You know, they retired on top. Now, for different reasons. You know, Jeff Gordon, I think it was kind of for him, you know, go out while he still had it. You know, leave him wanting more. And I respect that. Jimmy Johnson didn't go great at the end, you know, went winless, certainly lost a step. I do wonder what it would have looked like this year with Hendrick Motorsports kind of coming back. I feel like he probably would have found victory lane because his team is Larson's team, but who knows? And then obviously Dale Jr. was health stuff and the concussions, but you know, if the drivers aren't having fun, then they're not going to do this anymore. You know, because here's the thing: you can say what you want about Kyle Busch. We've talked about Kyle Busch a lot. He's been on this show. I thought the interview we had with him before Nashville Super Speedway was awesome. I thought he was great, but he's opinionated, and some people don't like that. Some people don't want to hear that. Another guy that is opinionated and maybe goes about it a different way, a little more calm, cool, and collected, is Denny Hamlin. And he brought up in Atlanta, the media scrums that I was talking about, that, you know, the people that go to the races, that watch the races, you know, they should have a voice too. And it got me thinking about some of the fans that are like, hey, shut up and drive. The fans truly understand the position of the drivers. So I asked that question.
You brought up the fans having a voice, or that the people that watch the races have a voice. Do you think that they truly have an understanding of the position that the drivers are in, and how can you better educate them if they don't?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right, is a lot of the casual race fans, all they see is the cars go around the racetrack in circles every Sunday. They don't understand what goes into it. Now, you have the avid ones that do understand it. But again, I don't know how much other sports, and they do a little bit, but how much do other sports really say, okay, this is what the fans want, right? You know, listen, they got rid of, you know, the kickoff, right, for football because of safety. Well, if you ask the fans, they probably are like, we want you guys each line up at the 40-yard line, run as fast as you can, and crash into each other. Because that's what they love about football is the contact. But they had to step in and say, you know, safety-wise, this is not the right thing. I'm sorry, we can't do that. You know, if you ask NBA fans, maybe they want the basket at 7 foot so everyone can dunk and you do windmills behind the backs and just, you know, just posterize each other on every play. But that's not true to what basketball is. So, again, as a sport, we really got to think about where we want to go in the future. What has made us strong in the past? And hopefully we dig our feet into those roots of who we really are.
So who are they? Who is NASCAR? And I thought that was a very well thought out answer, and it's true. I mean, they're certainly, and NASCAR is in a state where they're bringing in new fans that don't understand every in and out of the sport. So, but I also think it's on NASCAR and the drivers to educate those fans. Just like, you know, you think about the early days of the Nashville Predators in this market. Not everybody knew about hockey. I didn't. But they did things to educate you on the sport. And so now I don't call myself an expert, but I can tell you the rules and I know how the game works. I think NASCAR and the drivers have an obligation to do that for a lot of these new fans that are coming in, and to an extent they are. But it's figuring out how to get everybody on the same page. Are they going to always agree with everything? No. But having an open line of communication, I really do think that they kind of got, we're going down this road with the Drivers' Council. It seems like there's always been eras with drivers where they've come close to a union or some sort of organization. And I really feel like that would help things. It just has never gotten there. Denny Hamlin talked about that. That, you know, we got to organize. We got to get organized because, it's just going to be better for us if we do. So, we'll keep this conversation going because this is a topic that's not going away, on the communication between NASCAR and the drivers and what needs to happen there. But I do want to hit on some silly season things here on the off week. Because it is full swing. Oh, and one more thing I was going to mention on that. It's also interesting to see how, because I've talked to some IndyCar drivers behind the scenes, it feels very different. Like, it feels like they have, again, they don't agree on everything, but they have more of an open line of communication, especially with Roger Penske taking over. That has really helped that. I think NASCAR will improve it. It's just got to get there. Silly season is in full swing, and the big announcement that we all knew was there finally happened. Brad Keselowski is in fact going to Roush Fenway Racing. He's going to have an ownership role. He's going to drive the 6 car. They said that Ryan Newman's been offered a part-time role. He's weighing his options to see what he wants to do. Also last week, Last week, it was announced Harrison Burton will take over the Wood Brothers number 21, leaving Matt DiBenedetto without a ride. Austin Cindric will take over the Penske number 2 for Brad Keselowski. No surprise there. It had been previously announced that Cindric was going to move up to the Cup Series in the 21. So Matt DiBenedetto looking for a ride. I thought he was very honest on his Instagram, saying that he was upset, he was hurt, all those things, and that it was okay to feel those feelings, and he's absolutely right. I think he'll land on his feet. If I'm him, this is, again, my opinion, I think looking for a competitive, really, really good Xfinity Series ride for next year is what he should do. I think he has his heart set on the Cup Series. I get it. And he may get a ride, but I don't know if it's going to be what he's in. And, you know, he's been in – that's basically the fourth Penske car. And I just think if he could get in with, you know, Junior Motorsports, even staying in the Penske camp and take over the 22, see if you can get sponsorship and do that, find a good, solid Xfinity team where you can win, I think that would be good for him. But we will see how that shakes out. But – Brad Keselowski is an interesting guy, and he has been open about that he's wanted to, you know, have some ownership in a team. That's been a goal of his. So he gave the reasons of why he made this move.
There was four key components to me. The ability to have a long-term driving contract was something I valued. I want to stay at one place and be there for a long time, and hopefully for the rest of my career. I know that's the intent and goal. And that position was of course, offered to me, as Steve articulated. The second position, which was really important to me, was to be in a leadership role, which, to maybe explain that, we're forming a competition committee that I'm proud to be a part of leading. So that will come together and, I think, allow me the freedom to express myself creatively and to lead the company and team to be the best it can be. That was really critical to me, to be able to have more control over my overall destiny with respect to matters competition related. The third thing was, the ownership position. That quite a unique opportunity that really excites me. Ownership is something I've always, I think, articulated to the fans and media. It was important to me long term. It represents growth for me personally and professionally, which is very important. And creates a deeper tie-in to really the fourth point, which is to have a role in this sport when I'm done driving. You know, I'm standing here in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and there's no irony lost on me that, you know, a lot of the names that you see in here are still involved in the sport in some way, shape, or form past their driving career, but a lot are not. I cannot see a day where I'm done driving and I don't want to be a part of this sport, and this opportunity allows me just that, the ability to have a role in the sport past my driving career.
Brad Keselowski on the reasons for him to do this, to go to Roush Fenway Racing. And you can tell that this is some stuff that he has put a lot of thought into. And I think he's leaving a team that's really, really good and he's won a championship with. He's going to a team that is not on that level right now. Now, if he's a part of the competition committee, he's giving his thoughts. He's obviously going to tell them, hey, this is how we did it at Penske. This is, you know, part of the formula of success, all those things. And they have a relation, you know, it's all the same engine. It's still Ford. I think that'll help. But I also don't think he's going to walk in there and go, hey, Brad's here. We're going to win races. Just don't think so. I think, I mean, Chris Buescher, he's okay. Brad Keselowski's obviously a much better driver. I think Ryan Newman at one time was. So that's going to help. I wonder if that team eventually, like if they have Newman in a part-time role, that means they want to get back to being a three-car team, which could be good for them. We'll see. Obviously, the charter stuff has changed a lot of that, but I'm curious to see how this plays out, and I think it'll work out in the long run, but I'm also curious of what this does. I think you're seeing this trend of drivers wanting to get into leadership roles, ownership roles. You know, I asked Kurt Busch if ownership was something he wanted in the future, and he kind of said, he didn't say no, but he said he thinks he leans more towards kind of a leadership role of a team and not having to worry about the ownership part of it. You know, who's next? I asked Kyle Busch. Could there be a future for KBM? Right now, no. He said no. He likes the truck program, and that's what he wants to have there. But, you know, who knows? So who's the next driver to put the ownership hat on? Maybe Kevin Harvick. I mean, he had KHI and then turned it into a management company. I know a lot of people feel like he's going to the TV booth when he's done. Kind of feel that way. I think he's going to race out his contract, but hey, you know, Gordon leaving could put him with Bowyer. They've always had good chemistry. They're friends. That's possible with Fox. So I don't know. I think Junior Motorsports goes to Cup eventually, probably not next year, but in 23. But I think there's a lot of potential there. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. I'll talk about SRX at Nashville. I was there last week. You'll hear from a couple drivers, a couple people, their thoughts on Nashville. It was so much fun, but we will do that when we come back. It is Chasing Checkers, all presented by Mercedes-Benz of Music City, European Collision Repair, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Firestone, the exclusive tire of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, as you listen on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. All right, moving fast and furious here, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, ChasingCheckersRadio.com for more content, all brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Music City, European Collision Repair, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Firestone, the exclusive tire of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, which is just 2 weeks away. Cannot wait for that. And this is the perfect way to end the show. Nashville becoming a racing city. We had the Ally 400. I'm wearing the hat if you're watching on the stream. At the Nashville Super Speedway, huge success. And then this past Saturday, I went to the fairgrounds, and oh man, it was fun being there. SRX, awesome race, side-by-side racing. Chase Elliott ran it. He won it, raced with his dad. And listen, old Awesome Bill was looking good, leading a bunch of laps, going side-by-side with his boy. And for a while there, it looked like, hey, I may have taught you everything you know, but I haven't taught you everything I know. Tony Stewart was in the mix. He wins the SRX championship. It was sold out. The mayor was there. Talked to him briefly about where things are going with that track. And, you know, he's obviously giving his support, wants to see this SMI deal happen. Eric Moses, the president of the Nashville Super Speedway, was there. A lot of people there showing their support. And that was fantastic. When I was in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, I asked a couple drivers, and you'll hear from them here, do you think it's feasible to have two cup races in Nashville at two different tracks? Here's Kevin Harvick.
Kevin,
Kevin, you guys raced at Nashville a few weeks ago. How did you feel that the facility looked? You won there before.
Yeah,
and do you think that it's feasible that if the fairgrounds, if everything moves there, that there could be a cup race at both tracks in the same market?
I think Nashville's a huge market for us. You know, I think there's a lot of race fans in Nashville, and I think it could easily support two races. You know, I think, honestly, the Nashville race for me, it went way better than I thought it was going to go from how the cars raced and the things that happened on the racetrack. So it, you know, it was way racier than I thought it was going to be. So, but I don't think two races there is any issue for the city.
Kevin Harvick on racing at Nashville. And, you know, I've given my thoughts on that. I think that both tracks can help each other. I think that both tracks can support it. I think both tracks will have great crowds. And because they're different. That's the big part. I talked to Ryan McGee. I was down in Hoover, Alabama for SEC Media Days this week. Talked to Ryan McGee from ESPN. And we got into Nashville, as he loves to discuss.
Last thing for you, I think you and Marty both will appreciate this. Saturday night, I went to a racetrack, the Nashville Fairgrounds.
Yeah.
It was packed,
yeah.
Sold out,
SRX.
The SRX, yep. and that was great to see because we've talked to you about it.
Yep.
The mayor was there. Mm-hmm. The right people were there.
Mm-hmm.
As you have always said when you come on our show, a ticket is a vote. How much do you think that the fair board can pay attention to that to try and get things moving there?
It was huge. It was gigantic. And for Chase Elliott to show up, and to win that race and battle his dad, you know,
awesome.
Dad should have won the race, right? Dad's just old; he couldn't do it anymore. But that night was perfect case scenario, and I was so jealous of anybody that was there, and that includes you. What I really wanted to do though was I wanted to go into the neighborhood and go, "Is it really this bad?
Yeah.
Was it really as bad as you thought it was going to be?" Because I don't think it is. But no, what SRX is doing is, I think it's like a test run. I mean, I told you I'm from Rockingham. When they got the truck, they reopened the track, got the truck series back. First year, great crowd. Second year, terrible crowd. Third year, no race. So everybody, I think, did what they needed to do. And I really still think all the steps are being taken in the right direction to get back to the fairgrounds, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I want it back. And the Super Speedway did great, too. I mean, I thought it was awesome.
Well, and that's what I talked to you guys about, which is go to both. Because the market needs to prove, no matter where it is, the market needs to prove, all right, we need it back. And so, yeah, I mean, if Nashville were to figure out how to have two races, right, in the same market along with postseason stuff, I mean, that's – you're the epicenter now, and that's how it should be.
Ryan McGee, ESPN, Marty and McGee, who has been supportive, big-time supportive of Nashville and racing at both tracks. And finally, Marcus Ericsson, who's a driver in the IndyCar series, he's never been to Nashville. But this furthers my point of how important this city is, how unique this city can be with all of the racing, with two racetracks that can support the Cup Series, the street course for the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. Marcus Ericsson of the IndyCar series and how excited he is to come to Nashville for the first time.
It will be, yeah. I never been to Nashville, even though I've been living now for 2.5 years in Indianapolis, and I've said pretty much every year that I need to go to Nashville for a weekend. Everyone keeps telling me how much fun it is, and now to go there for a race weekend is just going to be amazing. I hear a lot of good things about the city, so I think that, you know, the race, all drivers I speak to, and you know, everyone is so excited about this upcoming race, this new race on our calendar, and just to have it in the middle of Nashville, it's gonna be so cool.
All I can say is keep supporting it. All three ventures going out to SRX and selling that out was fantastic. I'm very, very proud of this city, and it's something that means a lot to me because I want everything to succeed. I was involved with the Super Speedway. I want that to succeed. I want the fairgrounds to succeed. I want the Grand Prix to succeed because I love racing and I love this city, and I want it all here. We are way out of time. I appreciate you listening today. You can check everything out at thegamenashville.com on demand. Just search for Chasing Checkers wherever you get your podcast. We'll do it again next Saturday at 9, presented by Mercedes-Benz of Music City, European Collision Repair, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Firestone on ESPN 102.5 The Game.